In recent years, Americans have faced a deluge of horrifying developments in politics and culture. Stolen elections, fascist rallies, families torn apart and locked away. A common refrain erupts at each new atrocity: this isn't who we are. In the new book, American Rule, political analyst Jared Yates Sexton upends those convenient fictions by laying bare the foundational myths at the heart of our collective American imagination. From the very origins of this nation, Americans in power have abused and subjugated others, enabling that corruption or the very myths of American exceptionalism and steadfast values, which are fed to the public and repeated across generations. Working through each era of American growth and change, Sexton weaves together the origins and perpetuation of these narratives still in the public memory and the acts we have chosen to forget. Jared Yates Sexton's new book is American Rule: How a Nation Conquered the World but Failed Its People. We welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
What got you thinking in this particular direction?
Well, you know, I was covering Donald Trump in 2016 and going to a lot of these rallies. And I think, like a lot of people, I didn't believe there was a possibility that Donald Trump could possibly be elected president of the United States. And when it happened, it was such a blow to my imagination and my understanding of what America was. And I needed to go back throughout history and sort of understand how we had arrived at this moment and how it was that somebody like him could have come to power. And from the very beginning, I didn't know what to expect. I thought that my understanding of American history was pretty strong and I might find some things that might explain it along the way. But from the very beginning, with the original founding of the country, what I discovered was that American history was completely different from what I had learned in school and in classes and most of the books that I'd come across. And I realized that a lot of it was based on a mythology that really had nothing to do with our actual history. And every step along the way, I found that to be true, which was both disturbing, but it also helped to explain a lot of things that, up until that point, had seemed unexplainable.
So is it as simple as we try to forget the stuff that we are ashamed of?
I think it's a combination of trying to forget it because of shame, but also because a lot of people who are wealthy and powerful and influential rely on these mythologies and these lies in order to stay wealthy, powerful, and influential. So it's been propagated throughout the history of the country by those people to maintain control and power and to keep common people from troubling their control and their power. So it's a combination of this, mythology that we internalize and that we use in our thoughts about what America is and what it's been, but also it is a mean of propagandized control.
So in other words, in my reading of the book, people should be ashamed but aren't.
I think that we've reached a point, particularly in this country, and we've seen it over the past couple of years especially, where a lot of us are starting to understand that there is, of course, systemic inequality. There's a mistreatment. Economic inequality has become incredibly disturbing and glaring. And so I think a lot of people are starting to wake up and realize that maybe the story of America that they've been fed most of their lives is not only inaccurate, but also dangerous. But we also have a movement in this country that rallies around Donald Trump and the Republican Party that is willfully in denial of what has actually happened in America. There's a reason why, of course, they talk about patriotic education. They talk about making America great again. And I think that what you see around Trump is a group of people who might understand some of this, who might understand some of the lies that they've been told, but for the most part are unwilling or, incapable of understanding most of the lies that they've been fed.
But on the other hand, it also is, they are representing much of our history. They are also showing us what we have been for a very long time, right?
That's absolutely right. One of the things that I found that was incredibly disturbing, and I didn't know this, was that at multiple times in American history, we've come to these moments, these precipices, and these are moments where America is in trouble. And you see this like back in the 1930s when the banks are failing and the Great Depression is running wild. you see groups of people who start to flock to, you know, so-called strong men like Donald Trump. Back then, it was Charles Lindbergh, the aviation hero, who talked about how, you know, there were these conspiracy theories. He was more or less talking about the deep state and spreading QAnon-like conspiracy theories back in the 30s. And then, of course, it reaches this crescendo where, you know, Charles Lindbergh becomes an actual, possible president of the United States. But we're saved by that because, of course, Roosevelt's New Deal kind of turned the tide economically, and then Pearl Harbor happens. But these are parts of our history that we've forgotten and we don't like to look at and we don't like to examine or learn from. But they do tell us that America has the potential to fall under the sway of these movements.
When you decided to start this story, where was the starting point for you of where you wanted to begin?
Well, I wanted to start at the very, very beginning. And I, to be honest with you, I didn't think that what I would find at the founding would be so shocking. I thought that I had a pretty good grasp on how this country was founded. But from the very beginning, I was really, really shocked. When you actually examine the historical record, you find strange things that you never, ever would have imagined or that you would have been taught in school. Like, for instance, the original Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson included a condemnation of slavery that talked about the possibility of ending the institution. The Congress rejected that and made him write a new one that, that took out any mention of slavery to begin with. Also, the men who founded the Constitution and framed the Constitution actually were not authorized to write a Constitution. They were in Philadelphia to revise the Articles of Confederation, and James Madison and a group of the founders took it upon themselves to form a government that they had no authorization or right to found. And these are things that you actually find even in James Madison's notes. And when you actually look at how the founding was put together, it was intentionally created to protect the wealthy and the powerful from the common people that they distrusted. So from the very beginning, I was really shocked by what I found, which was an alternate history of America that has been hidden by all of these lies.
When you talk about the lies, who started, like, when did it start to become a lie?
From the very beginning. So the Constitution is framed, of course, by Madison and the founding fathers who were trying to protect their power and their wealth. And almost immediately, and this is it's very strange to now think about this, but almost immediately, James Madison, John Jay and Alexander Hamilton, they take to the newspapers and they start using this fake name, Publius. And they start publishing what we've come to call the Federalist Papers. And the Federalist Papers are these weird sort of rationalizations for why the Constitution should be ratified. And it's very conspiracy theory heavy. The idea that if we don't pass it, America will fall apart, we'll be attacked by Native Americans, we'll fall into complete ruin. And meanwhile, it's people who were in the room negotiating the Constitution writing this as if they are another person who is not involved in it. So the lie begins right there, and it automatically starts using the language of Jefferson, freedom, equality, liberty, and it uses that to sort of cover the tracks of a founding that they weren't authorized to have in the first place.
So as I mentioned in the introduction, you look at these various eras, but when you look at contemporary history, I mean, there were moments we could change things, right? But we didn't really.
Absolutely. And the problem there is that these moments of change or near change, we now look back on them and we think that somehow or another major change was achieved. So we look, for instance, at civil rights or the anti-war culture in the 60s and 70s. And while, you know, civil rights were put into law and they're currently being dismantled, but that's neither here nor there, we look at this through a mythology that somehow or another a major victory was won. But what you actually see in these moments is that there are momentary troublings of the system. There are moments where that control and that power is endangered, but inevitably the system starts to push back against it and actually swallows the story whole, which is how you have a figure like Martin Luther King Jr., who was actually hated in America in the 1960s, has now been turned into a beloved figure. The history has been scrubbed clean as if he was beloved the entire time, and that because Martin Luther King was able to achieve what he achieved, there's no need for protest anymore. There's no need for any more change. So eventually the story sort of absorbs these challenges and sort of uses them to its own advantage.
Is that to say that history could look fondly upon the presidency of Donald Trump?
These things are really possible. I mean, one of the things that he's pushing for right now is this idea of patriotic education, which is actually trying to challenge things like the book American Rule or the 1619 Project by the New York Times. And what you actually find is that history and textbooks and these things that we learn from, they can actually be political weapons. And so if Donald Trump were able to either win re-election or is, you know, allowed to not accept defeat and continue in power, we could see something like a patriotic education change history in major wholesale ways. And we find that history is really malleable and can tell any story about any person at any time.
When you think about where we are now and the contemporary history and with Election Day upon us, what should we make of that as we think to our future?
Well, I think on one hand, we're at this moment of a real precipice. We have a decision to make, and I think it relies on whether or not we take this moment to reconsider who we are, where we've been, and where we're going. I think we need to actually reckon with where we've come from and what we've done, and understand that a lot of these mythologies that have allowed us to become a superpower have also kept us from being able to achieve more human goals. Our education system is in trouble. We don't have health care. Our infrastructure is crumbling. We can start to move away from that mythology and away from that superpower project, and we can start to actually make our lives better. But as long as we're trapped in these mythologies, it's really hard to imagine a future that doesn't look like the past that has actually been mythologized.
And really, we're all sort of to blame for the mythology, right? I mean, we take some form of it at one time or another.
Absolutely. And one of the weirder parts of this story, and we're talking about reality. We're talking about how reality is subjective and it can be changed and moved around. One of the things that we have done is we have actually taken the myths of America and American exceptionalism, and we've sort of based a lot of what we think about ourselves around those ideas. And it's given us this feeling of power, of belonging to something greater than ourselves. And that's one of the reasons why it's so hard for people to shake loose of this stuff, is because, you know, you can be patriotic. That's not a problem whatsoever. But when it becomes this hyper-patriotism that is at the expense of the safety and equality of other people, all of a sudden we start to find that people really get violent and angry when you start talking about the mythology that they've based a lot of their self-identity around.
You say that Trump was the ideal candidate of the time. We're 4 years since he has been elected. We'll know in a matter of days, but is he still the ideal candidate of the time?
Well, the reason I think that he was able to get elected in 2016, and of course, there are a lot of factors, of course, white supremacy, economic populism, anger in middle America. I think these are all reasons why Donald Trump was able to be elected. But as a candidate, you know, he came along with a really novel understanding of reality. You know, we start talking about fake news. We start talking about what he perceived and what he felt as being real. The difference, I think, in 2020 is that we have watched him lie about one thing after another and present a rosy picture with things like the pandemic and the economy, and we know it not to be true. So I think in 2016 was where we started to realize that reality was malleable and subjective, that it was based on what we all thought about the world, that there wasn't some sort of giant objective consensus. But right now in 2020, after his handling of America, I think people are tired of living in the delusional reality of Donald Trump. And so I think that is probably the difference between this upcoming election and what initially got him in office.
You talk about delusional. I've often thought over the last 4 years that I was delusional in thinking that there were guardrails, that there were things that could stop what was happening, that there would be people who would put the country before party, that Republicans would stand up and say, no, I don't think so. And we haven't seen that. And with just days to go, we're still not seeing that. So if not now, when?
That's a great question. And you know, one of the things that Donald Trump has exposed is that, and this is a weird thing to talk about, but he's exposed that politics is a social construct. And again, reality and law, these are all social constructs that only have power as long as we believe in them and behave by them. We have now reached a point, particularly with the way that our government is constructed, where if one party simply wants to behave in bad faith in order to maintain control and power, they can do that, and it throws the entire system off, as long as they don't have shame about behaving in that way with in terms of power and control. So I think we've reached the point with the Republican Party, unfortunately, where there's really not a lot of coming back. They've shrunk their electoral base so small that there's no way for them to make a larger appeal, which is what we're seeing with this election, is that Donald Trump has no possibility of even gaining a plurality of the vote. The question is whether or not the Republican Party is going to look at what they've done, react in shame, and act in conscience. But I don't think that we've seen anything so far that shows more than maybe one or two even have the possibility of doing that. I think there's a real possibility we might see in the future, particularly if Trump loses, that there might be a new conservative alternative to the Republican Party, or that the Republican Party might just dive in feet first into something like QAnon and just become only a conspiratorial party. But so far, we've seen that those guardrails that you talk about, which I think a lot of us believe are going to be there, they simply don't exist if a party is going to act in bad faith.
So you have, and I realize these numbers aren't accurate, but you have half the country who think that America is becoming great again, and you have half of us who believe that the country is very close to total collapse.
I would actually say one of the things that we have come to believe is the idea that we are equally split. But the Republican Party actually represents a minority of the country. It just so happens, because of the Electoral College and the makeup of the Senate, that it seems like they represent half of the country. I would also say that a lot of the people that we're talking about, and of course, Donald Trump has his fervent base, people who will never leave him. It doesn't matter what happens with him. They'll be Trumpists probably for the rest of their lives. But there are a lot of other people who I think that they have engaged in this simply because they've been disgusted with politics. Maybe there's some latent racism and latent misogyny that has played into it. But I think if you can talk about America and what it really is and where it's been and where it's going, and you can start to talk about the problems of the people in maybe middle America and the Midwest, where I come from, if you can start to have a dialogue with them about what has actually happened, I think there's a large part of what you would now consider Trump's base that would actually move away and join back with society in, you know, something even approaching reality.
So as you have gone through these various eras and looked at the origins and the perpetuations of these myths, are you optimistic for the future?
I'm strangely optimistic. I'm actually more optimistic after I started researching this book than I was before. And the reason is, when you actually look at American history, there's some really dark and disturbing stuff. I mean, you know, there are links between Nazi Germany and America that we really don't like to talk about, and a relationship there that is really upsetting and really disturbing. But when you actually take a look at the whole of American history, what you recognize is that American history is like a pendulum. There are moments where the American people feel like that they have no power, that the government is bought and sold, that they're not being represented, the wealthy and the powerful control everything. And then the pendulum swings, and then they remember that they have agency, that they have power. And when they organize together and when they engage in solidarity efforts, they change the world. And so we've been in moments like this before. We've been on the precipice of fascism. We've been on the precipice of, an aristocracy. But when Americans remember that they can come together, and when they come together, they win, massive change happens. So I think there is a very good possibility that the future could be better. But first of all, we have to disabuse ourselves of these mythologies so that we can start finding one another and working together.
I always, when I'm teaching interviewing, I always caution my students not to drop a bomb at the end of an interview, because it just upends the whole thing. So let me ask you this question. Is leadership a mythology?
That's a fascinating question. I think one of the things that I discovered writing American Rule is that right now, you know, people talk about a cult of personality around either strongmen or authoritarians or Donald Trump, the idea that his supporters are engaged in a sort of cult. And what you actually find is that in the era of spectacle, particularly since the turn of the 20th century, and even going back or back to 1800 with Thomas Jefferson, you actually see that politicians and leaders have to construct a cult of personality around themselves. The problem is that we currently have a president who is not interested in letting go of that cult of personality. Most presidents get elected and they're more worried about governing than they are people, you know, worshiping them or, you know, treating them as if they're infallible gods. The problem is that we have now gotten a president who needs it and loves it, as opposed to a president who puts it aside until the next time they have to run for re-election.
The name of the book is American Rule, How a Nation Conquered the World but Failed Its People. Jared Yates Sexton, I thank you very much for being with us. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, American Rule, How a Nation Conquered the World but Failed Its People. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.